Hello, everybody. Welcome. Thank you for joining us for this number three class in the 2025 Certified Destination Wedding Ceremony Planner program. I think I speak for Cherie too, and as well as Lisa. We really take our hats off to you for going an extra step here to build your business. I'm convinced in a world of AI where a lot of the basics of putting destination wedding trips together are going to be easier for consumers. Many of them are really going to want to turn to advisors like you who have this extra training. So I really applaud you for doing this. We're so pleased to have back with us, one of the biggest names in wedding planning in North America, Cherie Ronning. And you've seen her bio, you know her background. She's doing the second class for us today. Cherie, thank you for being here with us, and we'll let you get started. Thank you.
Okay, can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So today is the second webinar that I'm presenting for travel agents. And in the first one, we talked a lot about just being a wedding planner. And we know that Lisa has taught you about how to be an actual ceremony participant with making official wedding, especially when you're out of the area and maybe the officiant doesn't show up. And so things that you need to know, they're all so important. And I really encourage you to don't wait till March to take your certification. You might be losing out on some good clients. So let's get started today. This is sort of the more boring stuff, the business side of the business. But I really think that in all my years of being a planner, teaching planners and teaching other small businesses about running a business and what you need to do, that this is really an important piece of what you're doing. So, to be successful at anything, you need a plan. And when I first heard this quote, I was at Wedding MBA and somebody was speaking, and it wasn't even somebody that I knew. And they made this statement and I wrote it down and I posted it on the wall in my office because I tend to shoot from the hip and sometimes I don't follow through. And so I realized that this was a quote that was meant for me to hear and pay attention to. So there's a lot of plans that you need to have, and I don't want you to think that it's all boring because it is part of your business. But I do think that when you understand that you're running a business, not just planning travel or not just maybe helping with a wedding on the side or anything else, it's a business. And so because it is, you need to write out a business plan. And that business plan does not have to be complicated. And don't look at the thing, excuse me, from the SBA because it's like 28 pages long. It's great if you're going to open a business with 500 employees, but a business plan for yourself, you should just be able to write it down on one sheet of paper. What you hope to accomplish, what you think you want to make financially, what do you see as your pitfalls, what do you see as your special skill set that you have to help people do what you want to do for them. So one-page business plan, and I really encourage you to, no matter how long you've been in business, to write that out. Because some of you, I understand, are working and you get paid by a 1099 or some such operation from the travel agency that you work for. But doing the wedding business is going to be your business. And that's why you need to have a little plan to get that figured out. Next, you need an operations plan. And this is simply who's going to do what. If you're the one person that wears the 27 hats, then I understand that it seems sort of silly that you should write this down. But you should write it down as to what would happen if you were ill, who would take over operations, what they need to do, what parts of any of the events that you are helping with need to be accomplished. And can they be accomplished by someone other than yourself? When you get that figured out, it kind of gives you a little lift off your shoulders, knowing that someone else could step in and help because you would have the step-by-step instructions for operating for a wedding, operating for your travel, and that someone else could step in and help. Heck, yeah, you know, we haven't gotten COVID again, but at least I haven't. But I would hope that, you know, if something bad happened, you wouldn't have to just put your clients on hold. It's hard to put a wedding on hold. You next need a marketing plan. And people think, well, I'll just post on social media. That'll be great. It won't be great if you don't have a plan, because how do you know what's working for you? You have to test your social media. You have to know if your clients are on TikTok, are they on Pinterest, where are they located? So that when you do your posting, then it's there and it's actually connecting up to them. When you are working, if you're going to use Facebook, I don't know how many of you might still use Facebook, but when you want to do an ad for Facebook, you can target brides in my area or engaged couples in my area with a radius of 100 miles or whatever, and you can actually pinpoint those people and then do your marketing to them. Facebook will then, with their bots, check and make sure that those people that you're the category that you want are going to be getting your postings. And then this last thing, which is really big, is your spending plan. Nobody likes the word budget. And so when I first started talking to parents of the couples, I would say, well, what is your budget? And they would say, oh, it's, you know, there's no budget. There's always a budget. I don't care if it's 10,000 or 100,000, there's always a budget. And so consequently, for your particular services, you need to know right up front how much they're willing to spend to have this wedding come off. Are they willing to spend enough money for you to attend at the resort or go on the cruise or wherever it's going to be? You need to come up with that spending plan. You need to know what it costs you to operate your office. My office is in my home. I'm sure many of you have the same situation, but I could still write off the square footage of my office and home. I could still write off my computer system and everything. So you can actually create the budget knowing how much you will have to spend to keep your system going, working well, keeping you working well. If you've got an assistant or two, it helps keep them knowing what they can, how many hours they can work. All of those things are part of your spending plan. You also need an attorney, and many, 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 many small businesses never have an attorney. They never even talk to an attorney. There are lots of attorneys in your city that specialize in small businesses, and you really need to talk to one of them and make a list of what you want to know from them and set an appointment. You don't know if you're doing something wrong. You don't know if you're covering your butt, because you need to be covered. Brides and grooms particularly, plus their parents, can be very cranky, can determine that you didn't do something right, and then they're going to sue you. And I don't want to make it sound like that happens all the time, but I had one wedding out of several hundred that they refused to pay their final bill and threatened me with the fact that their dad had more attorneys than I did. And so consequently, they were not going to pay for that final thing. But I did go to court, to small claims court, and I did get paid eventually. But it was really very stressful emotionally for me. And it made all the girls that worked with me nervous. So get an attorney. The other thing they need to do for you is write the contract between you and the clients. Now, you can use a basic contract that they define, but there's so many things that you have to have included on those things. I know that there used to be a lady that came to Wedding MBA who said she was a attorney just for planners, but I don't think that's what you need. I think what you need is a small business attorney, because you're a small business. You need to then have a client contract. And then on that contract, you need a space to define your services and their pricing. And you need to have boundaries. You'll only take phone calls between, 8 a.m. and 6 p.m., whatever you're comfortable with. Because you don't want people showing up at your home, calling you at midnight, calling and crying and screaming about their mother. All those things can happen, and you can alleviate almost all of it by having clearly defined services and clearly defined boundaries. Don't accept a text as a guarantee for what they want. They've got to put it back into an email. You've got to have proof that you've gotten it, and be able to print those out if you need to. And you have to have your pricing defined for each of the services that you're going to be doing for them. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But my big thing is everyone who's paying a piece of this service, whether it's grandma, mother-in-law, uncle, whoever, if they are paying for something to make this wedding happen, they need to sign the contract, because you don't want to get to the day of the wedding and grandma said she was going to pay for the cake, but she never took care of that. And then they're mad at you. So everyone signs who's paying for a piece of the service. No way. Don't let them get off without it, because it's your protection. Okay, accountant, this is the really, really boring stuff. I know, because I am an accountant, but I don't want you to think that you can do everything yourself. We can all run a super easy accounting software, and you should be able to do that yourself. But do you need to hire a bookkeeper? I have a gal that I have referred for years who takes my clients' information. And she really works with their bank statement. And with that bank statement, pretty much she can break it down by category. So you'll have that. But you need to know from your accountant, by the size of your business, the nature of the area where you live, what kind of services you're offering. Do you need to be a sole proprietor? That's probably what most of you are now. Do you need to be a sole proprietor LLC? That gives you a little bit of protection, but you need to speak to an accountant about this. And again, this is where you get online and find somebody in your area. I really like to work with women accountants. Sorry, John, but that's my preference. But anyway, but I want you to find somebody that you can be comfortable with, who can help you screen someone that they recommend for a bookkeeping bookkeeping position. You need to know what kind of business you should actually be running and what kind of accounting software they recommend. I like to think that I want to find an accountant who thinks like I do. I'm pretty number oriented, but like I said, I tend to be a space cadet when it comes to some things, and I leave it too long, that horrible procrastination thing. And then I would find myself November 30th trying to get all my stuff posted up to give to the accountant at the end of the year. So if you have a bookkeeper that can just work on your stuff once a month, maybe 2 or 3 hours is all you need, but you really need someone with a good background. They should not have access to your funds. They should not be able to add or subtract funds from any of your accounts. They're just there to handle the actual accounting piece. And then I know it all sounds so dreadful here, but you need to know and understand your numbers. And I mean, really understand. And if you don't understand it, go back to the bookkeeper, go back to the accountant and say, what does this really mean? If they run a profit and loss for you at the end of the month, do you know what that means? Some people think that if you have gotten $1,000 from a client, you've made $1,000, but you haven't made $1,000. You have ongoing expenses that come out of that. So to really know and understand your numbers, you really need to understand how your business works. And the bookkeeper and your accountant can help you understand where you need to be, where you need to be going. So having it a good accountant and a good attorney will really save you in the long run and helps you to know that you're doing well. And if you're not doing well, what do you need to do to upgrade? Oh, insurance. It's one of those things that we all hate. I mean, every time I look at my car insurance bill, I think, where do they get off charging that much? But we have to have insurance. And I'd like to say cover your assets, meaning your butt and all your assets, meaning all of your financial situation. What are your numbers? How much money do you have in the bank? If somebody could sue you, what could they get? This is why you have insurance. And you need a good comprehensive insurance policy that's called that has the E&O, which is errors and omissions. We all make mistakes, and just because you forgot something doesn't mean you should, lose out on being paid. So that is a particular thing that you would want to have in your insurance. You want to cover your team members, anybody that's going to be on site with you, or even working in the office with you should be covered. Because these things that get out of hand actually hurt your team and they hurt you and they hurt your reputation. And I don't want to see that happen to any of you. So be sure to cover your assets, please. Well, this is my always, I say this to every class, whether it's you guys or other small businesses I'm helping. It's all about the money. It is all about the money. What you're doing is not a hobby. I have seen this so many gals with stars in their eyes, want to be a wedding planner, want to be a florist. They don't know a darn thing about running a business, how much it costs. And they again think if they get a deposit that they've made that much money. But if you get a deposit and you're a florist and the deposit just barely covers the cost of the floral, you haven't made any money yet because it's going to pay for the expense of the flowers. As a planner, you will get a deposit, but it is not really your money to spend. And I like to think that all of you are savvy enough to realize that, but sometimes we get excited. And sometimes, the client gives you a big deposit and you have something due in your life that you don't have the funds for. And so you take it out of your business. And then later you come up short. And that is not the way you want to operate your business. And it's certainly not the way you want your life to run. I suggest for all of the essential services that you set up something, I call it like a Chinese food menu. With the prices that you're charging, so that they can choose from the offerings. If you your opening price of whatever it is, $5,000, $2,500, includes handling their travel, being on location, that whatever it is, then that's where you need to have those prices clearly stated, and that will go on your contract. And then they choose what they want from your offerings. Some people don't want you to maybe collect and take care of the RSVPs. Some people do want you to do that. Well, you can't do that for free because somebody in your office or you is going to be getting those envelopes in the mail. And then you've got to get them into a spreadsheet and you've got to keep accurate numbers because you're going to have to inform the, location of the numbers of people that are coming that are guaranteed. And maybe you're setting that up, the RSVP that shows, what your entree choice is. So that's pretty important. And we started doing that after really our first couple years in business because everybody is so sure that you know they're coming and they're going to say, Although, of course, they know I want chicken. I'm not a beef eater. You don't know those things. And they don't know those things. And they're never going to even say to you, oh, Aunt Sue is coming. And I know she didn't send in her RSVP, but she's coming and she wants chicken. Well, that's why we want the stuff to come to you, because you have the guest list of who was invited and you reach out to them, 3 weeks prior to the wedding and say, hey, are you coming? Or we don't know, and we don't have a seat for you if we don't get your RSVP. You can be very nice about it, but it's so unfair. I've done weddings where 10 or 12 extra people show up. And one lady said, well, I know I send in my RSVP because I did it with red ink. And we have all the little RSVP cards there as people are checking in. And I said, oh, is it this one? And she said, yes. And I said, I'm not sure how we're supposed to know it's you because you didn't put your name on it. And she was like, oh, well, I want to sit at the bride's table. I said, well, the only table that's left is, and there's one seat open and it's with the people from the band. She wasn't very happy, but it's not your fault and you can't change it. So be sure that you're really comfortable with who's coming, how many, what they want to eat, all of those things. After your clients, and you can kind of give them this little rundown, this is again, you want them to be successful and you want you to be successful, and we don't want too many surprises. I don't think I've ever done a wedding that there weren't some surprises, but you can keep it to a minimum by being very organized yourself. And like we talked about in the last webinar, those timelines, they really help you know, set a time when the RSVPs must be in, and then reach out to those who have not sent theirs back. So once they choose from our Chinese food menu what they want from you, then that can all go on the contract, and then you can offer a payment plan to them if they need it after they give you a 50% non-refundable deposit. Because honestly, you've already put a lot of time into this, meeting with them, discussing their options, getting a contract ready for their signature. So I know it sounds like this could be a lot of fun, and it is something that you can do, but take it from me, I've learned everything the hard way, and I don't want any of you to ever come up short. So always get a 50% deposit upfront, non-refundable, and you need to be paid in full 30 days out. So you'll want to invoice them at 45 days out. And at 30 days out, if you haven't been paid, you should send a polite email or letter and say, as of today, your balance of $2,812 is due. And would you please call with a credit card number? And then if they don't, you could say, we have to suspend services until we are paid in full. And you could say it nicely. You can be kind of grumpy, but this is your money. And if you don't get it, then how are you going to pay for your staff? How are you going to pay for making all the favors for them or printing out the menu cards? You need to be paid in full 30 days out. Hope I'm not sounding too grumpy, but you got to. So I know that several of you have asked me for time to contact me and discuss specific questions. And I will tell you what I told each of them is that I'm always willing to give you the first half hour for free because you're members of DWHSA. I typically charge $95 an hour for consulting, but for DWHSA members, I charge $50 an hour. So if you want 1 hour of consulting time, you're only going to pay $25 because the first half hour is free, and then the second half hour would be half of that $50. Please have your questions written down so that we don't get, which is easy to do, off the subject and get to be chatting about things. I really want to be able to give you value for what you do. And I'm happy to answer any questions, work with you to maybe help you build your menu or whatever it's going to be. But you need to be prepared so that we don't waste your time and money or my time and money. So that's it for today. And again, if you want to call or text me, that's fine. I typically do not answer my phone, so I would suggest that you text or email me and then tell me what you're interested in learning more about, and then we can set up a time to talk. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you get some good value from this one, and we'll see you on the next one.
That's great, Cherie. Thank you. We've got some questions for you. So, before we dive into the questions, just a housekeeping note for everybody. If you are a longtime member of the association, I know you might look at some of the topics today and you feel you've done a lot of these steps for your travel business. And a big point in the class today is the way wedding planners operate, and more importantly, the way that consumers want wedding planning help delivered to them means it is time, even if you think you've done all these things, you've been selling travel for 500 years and you've had your agency for 400 of those years. That's all great. But we do encourage you today to look back over, and we'll have the slides alongside the video tomorrow in the resources page. But things like your attorney, your accountant, you want to double check in your mind whether you are ready with those helpers for the wedding planning task that you're going to be taking on. It's really important not to leave the class today or watch this video later and say, "Well, I've done all that for my travel business. I don't even need to listen to this hour." And that's not correct because there are wedding planning expectations that consumers have that go above and beyond the travel planning that you're going to do for them. So in that vein, Cherie, I've got some questions here for you. And let me start with the attorney. You made, I thought, a great point that rather than worrying about having an attorney who knows wedding law, and you know, we all, when we go to Wedding MBA and ABC and other great events out there, there are always wedding attorneys who are speakers. But I thought your point was well taken that what we really need is someone in our state or province who knows the local laws. Because if we're going to get sued, that's probably where it's going to happen.
Absolutely.
Do you find that are we're looking for somebody who really understands the small business rules in our state or province, right? Someone who really knows how the law works where we are based. Is that the way to look at it?
Yes. Having a local attorney, a local accountant who specializes in small business, not somebody who specializes in corporate law. This is something that, as a small business owner, maybe your annual gross is only $150,000 a year. Most attorneys would not take you on, but the small business attorneys and accountants would be delighted to take you on and help you.
Yeah, very good advice. And something we've talked about when we've done training on contracts before, just a reminder, with your client agreements and your wedding contracts, make sure there is a clause in there. And this is covered. We do have some webinar videos about your client agreements, and there are bullet point lists of the clauses we recommend you have in those. One that sometimes we gloss over in the regular webinars, but it's really important for this training, the jurisdiction clause. That little clause you've seen in contracts that says, if you, my clients, and I, the travel agency, have a disagreement, you agree that you will bring your disagreement in the courts in the state of Tennessee or the province of Alberta. So, you know, they can't bring a claim, a case against you five states or provinces away. And Sheree, I don't know if you've ever run into that where, it's so important to have a clause in your client contracts that says, if you want to take me to court, you're going to have to do it where I'm based.
That's so true, John. And I didn't do much out of the country in my years of planning, but I certainly was in a variety of states. And my attorney was very quick to point that out to me. especially because I live on the border of Washington and Oregon, and Oregon laws are different than Washington laws. So I had to really get that organized with her, and it made me feel a lot safer. And you just don't know when people's emotions run high, they can be kind of grumpy.
Yeah. Grumpy when it matters. It's dollars and cents. That's true. We've got a question about the accountants part of this.
Okay.
Without giving away too many secrets, how do regular wedding planners who are not doing destination wedding, how do wedding planners typically get paid? Is it always fees? Do wedding planners get commissions on things? We know how travel agents get paid, but Cindy here is wondering, can you just shed some light on does a typical wedding planner get paid?
Sure. I worked with a base fee. When I did my last weddings about 4 years ago, my base fee at that time was $10,000, and my contract said I would bring two people, two of my staff people, to the wedding and reception to make sure there were no loose ends. But then we had an additional, if they wanted us to track their RSVPs, if they wanted us to stuff and mail the invitations, all of those things. And another price, because like I said, it's kind of like the Chinese food menu. But again, after the first meeting and we've settled on the date that works for them and made a list of expectations, then at that point, I would present a contract and get 50% down. So if I did a wedding 4 years ago, I would have gotten a check within the first couple weeks of organizing for $5,000, and then the balance would be due 30 days out. We do not get commissions. That's not, people always think, well, you're leaving money on the table. Well, I'm not going to refer someone. There are a lot of vendors out there that want you to use them. I went through that a lot. Oh, but you always do these big weddings. Well, yes, I do, but it's because I use the best of the best. And as I called it, I had my A team for Portland. These are the photographers. I would give them a list of three. These are the florists. These are the locations. Or if somewhere else, I'd give them caterers. But I never took a kickback. That's just our commission. That's just, I'm charging a fee for my service. I don't need to get paid on top of that. I'm sure other people might feel different about that, but most wedding planners do not take commission from someone else.
So, folks, that's an important distinction as you do, as you get this certification and you start putting yourself out there, not just the travel advisor, but as the ceremony planner, the wedding planner representing these couples. Keep that in mind when you're looking at your bookkeeping practices. You're going to be depending more on the fees. And take special note of what Cherie's saying about the deposit. Cherie, I find with a lot of members sometimes who are charging service fees for different things, that we're a little timid about asking for a lot of that up front. And so I love your advice about you better get half of it up front.
Yeah. And, I had a few people kind of, cringe when I said, well, I need a 50% deposit today. I'll have the contract to you in 48 hours. It will come direct from the attorney. But the people who were serious and who were spending serious dollars on the wedding for their child or their nephew or whatever, whoever, they were happy to have a contract that spelled very specifically what was going to happen. And I never had someone say to me, oh, you didn't do everything. What they always said to me was, you gals went over and above. We are so happy. We got lots of gifts. We got lots of things later. And that was fine with me. But I wanted it to be very clear that this is what the service costs. Because there's a lot of time involved and people don't really think about it. And they think, oh, it'll be so much fun to go with her to pick out the flowers. Well, it's not. People get to crying and they argue with their mother and, all of those things. So it's your protection. And it's also, it's your client's protection, but it's also your protection that they're not going to change their mind halfway through and say, oh, we don't want to do, well, sorry. Your contract says 50% non-refundable.
Yeah. Well, one more question, and then we'll wrap things up. Looking at doing the Chinese menu, and that's a great way to put it. So many of us have travel-related service fees, and we even have a chart that we'll give clients. It's this much for an air ticket, and it's this much to do a name change on the room once it's reserved, and things like that. But there are obviously a lot more services we're going to be charging for now as the wedding planner. And I liked your idea of that menu because there are folks, we're going to have a wide range of clients. Some want full service. They want us there holding their hand on the trip in person and everything
That's
beforehand.
right.
And then there are others who say, I want this service, that service, but I don't need the rest of it.
Exactly. And again, it covers you if you have created that contract that says you are going to do this. You will be at the resort. You will not be at the resort. I mean, it's very clear when it's in writing. And if a week out they say, wow, we really should have organized to have you attend. Well, then they got to pay, and they got to pay that day.
Yeah, folks, remember in the resources page, the one that has the password on it, we put down at the bottom of the page, we've got the audio recording and the slides from one of our longtime members, Jenny Chaffer, who has made this an art and a science doing the wedding planning services. And I think her recommendation is something we should all consider. She recommended kind of a three-level set of packages, bronze, silver, and gold. Hopefully, you'll come up with cuter names than that. But your first package could be just the bare bones wedding ceremony support, staying in, not just introducing the couples to the on-site coordinators at the resort or on the ship, but you would agree to sit in on the early calls and help your clients pick the wedding package. But then after that, they work just with the coordinator. And then Jenny said, the middle package can be you're being a lot more involved with the couple, helping them make decisions about the package and the add-on services, but it's the middle package, the silver package, so you're not going with them on the trip. And then Jenny said the gold package, the top package, is you do all that preliminary work, holding the couple's hands at home while they're picking things in the packages, but then you're also going on the trip and being there with them. So we do encourage you to think about that as a Chinese menu to start with. You can start with just the bronze package. If you're really concerned about getting your feet wet in this area of wedding planning for destination wedding, start with just the bronze package. But over time, you are going to need to offer more of a variety of services because you have clients who want more than just your bidding on the Zoom calls with the coordinator.
Yes, and the more that you have to offer, and if you do it well, the more money you will make. And again, this is not a hobby. This is a career, and I want you to make well, everyone to make good money at it. You're not gouging the client. You're getting them to pay for your time, your expertise, your knowledge, your hands-on approach. That's something that people don't realize they need till it's actually there. I've never had anybody say, oh, we're so sorry you came.
True, true. Folks, I want to give Cherie the last word here in just a moment. Remember, we think this is one of the big trends in the future for travel advisors in romance travel. It's getting much more hands-on involved in the wedding planning and actually serving as the official wedding planner for your couples. So you're in the right place getting in this area. The point of today's session is there are some things you have to rethink about the accountant you have. And the way your books are set up and the way your attorney works, there's some things you've got to take another look at because it's not just the travel you're dealing with anymore. I want to mention super fast again, over the weekend, we're recording those three videos. We took the wedding packages from five of the major vendors out there: Hyatt Inclusive Collection, Hilton All Inclusive, Sandals, Iberostar, and AIC, the Hard Rock and Unico folks. And we took their packages and pulled out a lot of detail. What are the flowers that are used? What's covered for the music? Is any video or photography included in that? So a lot of what's going to be in those recorded videos coming up next week will be examples from those five companies, because they're some of the biggest wedding providers out there. Those videos will also cover advice about how to set your fees. It's also going to get into more tips along what Jenny's offered about how to actually go along with your clients, your couples. And it's going to get into what should be in your wedding specific client agreements. And again, on the ceremony side, we're going to focus on things you need to know about five or six different areas: the flowers, the officiant, the music, the photography and videography, the ceremony decor, those areas. And then we'll talk a little bit about the reception, because a lot of times reception services are thrown in with the wedding packages. So just be aware, it's going to be three big videos. A lot of the exam questions will come off that. And last thing I'll mention is the week of October 20th, the exam will be ready. And you can take the exam anytime through March 31st for sure. You can take it after March 31st. But if you wait past that date, we'll be working on next fall's content, which means some of the questions may apply to things that aren't covered in this year's training. So you want to March 31st, circle on your calendar, is really the target date to try to take the exam by. Sheree, listen, thank you. I want to mention right on the screen here, guys, that's her direct email address and her direct phone number for texting. Any questions you run into, she was very upfront about, you know, she can talk to you initially, and then if you want some extra consulting time, she can help you at a reduced rate. But she's very supportive of BWHCA members. So any questions you've got about the content of this course, and especially about the wedding planning part of it, please reach out to her. Sheree, let me give you the last word here. Any other advice or tips you want to share with us?
One of the things I thought of while you were talking was that whether they are a licensed officiant or not, everybody should be able to do off the cuff, a simple ceremony. You know, there's the basic steps. I know Lisa went through that, because I've had probably half a dozen weddings in my career where the officiant did not show up. But I knew the couple, I had the wedding program, so I just said, hello and welcome to the wedding of John and Susan, you know, because you can't just tell everybody, well, sorry, but, you know, and then they can go later and get it certified or get the person that didn't show up to sign the license. But keep that in your hip pockets. Not that you want to do that, and I never charged for doing that, because they were already stressed out enough, but you could be on the edge of, now what am I going to do? So just know that you could do a basic, simple ceremony yourself, and the audience or guests don't need to know that you are not certified. And don't hesitate to call or text me, and or send an email, and we'll get something set up.
Very good. Folks, this is the last live class. Remember, there's some pre-recorded videos coming next week. And then when you're ready, you can take the exam anytime through the end of March. I want to say, again, a big thanks to a longtime friend who helped us develop this whole program, Sheree Ronning. Sheree, thank you so much for everything. And hopefully we won't pelt you with too many questions here, but we appreciate your helping us.
You're welcome, John. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, everybody. We'll be in touch early next week with those videos, and then we'll let you know when the test is ready. Thanks, everybody. Bye.